Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Twelve countries are targeted in a new travel ban from the Trump administration: Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. Folks from seven other countries are under a partial ban. To learn what this ban means for you and travelers around the world and what kind of effect it could have locally, we talked with Ahmed Rehab. He's the executive director of the Council of American Islamic Relations in Chicago, or CARE. He began with his initial reactions to the ban. Here's Ahmed.
My initial reaction was, here we go again. Mm-hmm. We've seen this before in the first Trump term in 2017, known as the Muslim ban. And that was struck down by the courts, and they came back again with iteration 2 and 3. And God knows this is, you know, travel ban 5.0. But here we are again.
So, I mean, in taking a look at the ban, how does it compare to the original ban from 2017?
There are some key differences. We're seeing a lot more African countries this time around. The first ban targeted mostly Arab and Muslim countries. The Trump administration likes diversity in one respect. When it comes to discrimination, you know, they've diversified the pool of countries they discriminate against. And so we have a bunch of African countries, a couple of South Asian countries, and a couple of Latin American countries.
So you feel this is just wholesale discrimination, not based on anything else?
Well, you know, the way I look at it is it's smoke and mirrors. I mean, there's no evidence that birthplace determines behavior other than in racist textbooks. And so this is, to me, less about national security and more about politics. It's a lazy shortcut to the appearance of being tough, which this president likes to appear as, knowingly serving his base synthetic red meat, not even real red meat. Because all this actually does is put strain on families, businesses, schools, and our economy without any palpable security benefit.
Well, I visited O'Hare International Airport here in Chicago on Monday when this ban went into effect. I started talking to travelers, and I met a man named Calvin Jackson. He's a naturalized American citizen from Liberia. It's an African country that's not affected by the travel ban, but this is what he had to say.
Yeah, obviously not a good thing, but If you can remember, that is not the first time Trump has targeted African countries. I think during the Trump's first administration, he called African countries shithole countries and things like that. I mean, I may be wrong, but the way I see him, he seemed to be this leader who is more favorable towards, you know, rich people than the poor people.
You know, I also talked to Iqbal Karim. He's from Sierra Leone, one of the countries on the partial ban list, and he actually lives in Chicago, and this is what he had to say.
At first, I thought it was a joke or I didn't believe it. We were baffled too, because we're a small country. You know, for us to be included in that category, it was a surprise for most of the people I talked to back home as well. There's not much evidence to go on, you know, as far as what's going on or why we're in that list.
You know, the other countries under a partial ban are Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela. Ahmed, you know, what are your thoughts when you hear from Calvin and Iqbal? What, you know, just on their concerns about this as well?
You know, I fully agree. I mean, this makes little sense policy-wise other than to send a signal. And if you notice, the countries that he has targeted are countries that you can consider low-hanging fruit geopolitically, easy to target. And then the cities here in America that he is now targeting with these raids, with the ICE agents and other troopers, are basically Democratic cities, again, sending a message to the base, cities like L.A., D.C., and Chicago. And if you look at what this president has done so far, you know, he's cut humanitarian aid globally, you know, targeted USAID. He's cut funding for public parks. He's cut scientific exploration with NASA and other places. Funding for public media, which is one of the few and rare places of unbiased reporting left in this country. And now he's coming after the immigration system and banning people based on where they were born and not based on any clear profiling of behavior, which is what we already have in our system. We have systems already to vet travelers into this country. This adds nothing but sends a signal to his base that he's a tough guy. And that's what it's about. It's about his ego. Mm-hmm. It's about his persona, the one that you saw in The Apprentice. That's still what this is about.
And that ego and the persona is actually impacting a lot of people. So I have to ask you this, and I hate asking you this, but Ahmed, are there people who you would suggest avoid traveling right now?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes. I would caution individuals who are on non-immigrant visas in this country, who are not U.S. citizens or green card holders, to avoid unnecessary travel or absolutely necessary travel. Latin folks from Central and South America, student visa holders, and the such.
If someone is traveling and is detained when they're trying to get back into the country, what do you recommend they do?
I would recommend they start planning before they travel. And so they should take copies of all their paperwork, their visa, their passport, their travel documents, and save a hard copy with somebody who is here in the United States. Have them exchange phone numbers, and that would be sort of the handler here in the United States, and then connect with an attorney before travel to know specifics about your case, because every case is different.
Sure.
And once they come back, to be able to activate this person to bring legal help to them should they need it.
So it's all about precautionary measures.
It is. It's about preparation. And again, those in certain categories should avoid travel altogether if possible, but if they have to, then that's the precaution they should take.
Should people have a immigration attorney ready?
I would suggest that. And we do offer a service at CARE Chicago called tapus.org. TAP stands for Travelers Assistance Project. And that project was created in 2017 with Muslim Ban 1.0, and it's still running strong. And so there's a form there where you can fill out your travel plans, and so an attorney could be ready to support when you come back. But there's also a hotline there if you need immediate support at O'Hare. This is Chicago specific. Nationally, there are other efforts. I mean, even here in Chicago, you have the National Immigrant Law Center, NILC, National Immigrant Justice Center, NIJC, ICER, ACLU, American Immigration Lawyers Association, and La Palenque. These are all very good resources besides CARE Chicago, the organization I'm the executive director of, that you can reach out to for support.
You know, a lot of folks are, you know, warned about, you know, your phone getting searched or taken mm-hmm. when you're reentering the country. You know, what authority does Customs and Border Protection have to search my phone? I mean, what rights do I have if mm-hmm. that comes up?
That's a great question, and it's a very legitimate concern given that people have private data. Nothing that necessarily is of a security concern, but, you know, photos or exchanges with families or whatever. And so that's a gray area of the law. Our position is that CPB can take your phone. They can check your phone. However, you don't have to unlock the phone. But if you don't, you should be aware that they may take your phone into a lab to try to unlock it. And that may mean that your phone is taken from you for a week or so. And so you make that decision. An alternative, of course, if you're concerned about any private data before you travel, is to delete that data or even to take a different phone when you're traveling that doesn't contain your private information.
How, you know, when you're traveling, you're coming back in, you know, you don't want to be, you want to go get your bags, mm-hmm. you want to get off the plane, you might be tired and hungry or even grumpy. How should you react to this? If you have an attitude, I guess they can make your life as miserable as they want to.
That is very true with law enforcement in general. So the general advice we always give is to be polite, yet confident and clear about your rights. But there is no reason to be emotional or to escalate the situation. when you're traveling, if you are pulled into secondary screening upon return into the United States, you should answer any questions related to your travel. These are the questions they have a right to ask you. But if these questions start to delve into territory that has little to do with your travel, like your political or religious leanings, you have a right to stop that and say you're not comfortable answering those questions without the presence of your attorney.
You know, could this ban affect everyday citizens in Chicago?
I think it does because, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, this affects not so much your national security, but things like our economy. I mean, there are a lot of companies that depend on some of these folks to do the work that is needed for the company. Educational facilities and institutions who have students who come and pay money to be a part of their educational system. Neighbors, friends, you know, the people I talk to, the inconvenience is the only thing we're really seeing here. People that would have come here for a wedding or for attending a university or for a job, and they had all their paperwork in place, and suddenly now they're banned wholesale just because they happen to be born somewhere. And you're looking at countries like Equatorial Guinea. I mean, does the average American think that by banning people from Equatorial Guinea that we're made safer wholesale?
Right.
You know, it's just, again, it's just a symbolic thing, in my opinion, that he is doing to send a message that he's tough on the unwanted. And the unwanted typically for him tend to be brown and black and Asian.
I know it may be it's still early since the ban took effect earlier this week on Monday, but are you already witnessing any, say, immediate ramifications of the ban?
Certainly, there's fear in the communities, especially when you combine that with the raids, the ICE raids that we have seen against some of the undocumented who are treated like criminals, even though they don't have any criminal offenses. And I think, you know, I really got to tell you, a big part of this, in order for this to happen, is the process of criminalization and demonization of these groups in order to make these very heavy-handed actions more palpable to the public. And so you have someone like Mahmoud Khalil, the student at Columbia University who was involved in the anti-genocide protests. He was rendered an anti-Semite or a terrorist sympathizer in order to criminalize him and demonize him enough to arrest somebody who has been pro-peace, pro-love, pro-human rights and justice. And the same with you know, everybody else who's been arrested from the Latin community, like Kilmar Garcia, and, you know, what do you accuse him of, right? So you accuse him of MS-13, you know, the closest stereotype that you can slap on the guy, and you whisk him away from his family, put him on a flight to a country he's never been, and because you've said he's a criminal, everybody's supposed to look away and go home. And that's the name of the game right now, criminalization, dehumanization, in order to make these heavy-handed stormtrooper type of, you know, policies palpable to the average person.
Just quickly, where can you turn again if you want to get more information on what you need to do? Where would you go?
You can start with our website, carechicago.org. At the very top, there's a very exhaustive a link for an exhaustive amount of resources. But you can also turn to the National Immigrant Law Center and the National Immigration Justice Center, ICER, ACLU, Immigration, American Immigration Lawyers Association, and La Palenque here in Chicago.
Well, thank you so much for that great information. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. That's Ahmad Rahab, Executive Director of CARE Chicago. Thanks for stopping by and sharing that invaluable information.
Thank you again for having me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmad. It was directed by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Conversations on the show hope to keep you connected to Chicago and beyond. Hit subscribe to never miss an episode, or you can visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Michael Puente in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
Love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.